You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 144 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carasino.
And we are joined this week by special guest, the famous Cousin Katie.
Oh, thanks for having me. So excited to be here.
That doesn't actually sound like she's excited to be here. For the Michael Cage edition?
The Paul Sorrento edition?
You're supposed to name another player number 44, Katie.
I don't know these things.
Well, we're coming to you live from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion,
wow.
Seattle Seahawks.
We are 4 episodes away from the Super Bowl 48 edition.
We are. The second Super Bowl 48 edition, really.
Probably like the fifth.
Because you're counting the actual podcast where we talked about Super Bowl 48?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that podcast geography? No, that's not geography. Is there a podcast math?
History.
There sometimes is when Tristan does math. What are we drinking tonight? Well.
My God. Since.
So spring-like outside.
Spring has come to Seattle.
You can tell. I mean, look, much of the snow has melted already.
But it's coming back on Friday.
Yeah, it's really. Oh,
we are drinking the Fremont Mountain Daisy IPA, which is a spring seasonal from Fremont.
Okay.
Because it's spring.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get through the.
Is this the only beer you had in your car, or did this?
No, I picked this up at Fred Meyer the other day when I was
intentionally.
You think he just has spring seasonals in his car?
I just don't know why. Why would you be motivated to buy spring beer right now? Like,
yeah, it was a nice looking bottle. I didn't know if we were necessarily going to drink it this
winter. Seasonals are not out there, but Fremont says although this is a spring beer in the alternate universe of beer seasons, there is still snow in the mountains and in the lowlands. A nip in the air. And it's cold as fuck.
It's more than
the
nip.
Lowlands are Renton, Washington.
We brew Mountain Daisy with an eye towards the return of the flowers to the mountains as the snow begins to melt the snow on your suburban streets.
Yeah, there we go.
And the eternal power of spring flexes her muscles. Before you criticize someone, you should walk a mile in their shoes. That way, when you criticize them, you are a mile away from them and you have their shoes.
Wow.
A quote to our good friend Jack Handy, friend of the podcast.
good friend of the pod, Jack Handy.
So this is the Fremont Mountain Daisy IPA. I'm excited to crack this open. And you know what? I'm ready for spring.
We actually drank it in a more appropriate springtime on the podcast last year. We did it March 12th.
We may again.
We
drank that Orca beer like 5 times and forgot every time.
Can you point out for the people who don't know what you're doing right now, what you're looking at?
Oh, everyone knows about the beer spreadsheet.
I mean, that happened. Like,
oh, everyone knows about the spreadsheet.
We discovered
Katie,
this
what did
like
you do with your cup?
Years ago. I didn't have a cup.
Okay.
she had a cup.
But
she
I feel like there might be some new the listener who doesn't know what this
I
is.
I mean, it's true. We did not do a full 2018 breakdown of the 285 and 5/6 beers.
God.
5/6.
Somehow that makes me hate you. I don't know why. But
there was one where you're like, I'm done.
No, it was a flight of beers that I did at McKellar DTLA on New Year's Eve. That's what put the unusual variable or fraction, I guess. There's the Pelton Cows Bath again, the unusual fraction in there.
And you've shared this spreadsheet for everybody?
No, I don't know that it's shared for everyone.
That was like a rare Peltoncast condescending thing where it's just like, on New Year's Eve in DTLA.
Rare? I don't know if it's rare.
Before I ate dinner at Major Dormo.
One of the 3 times I've been in the last 6 weeks.
They know you now. They have your table waiting.
They're going to call them KP fries pretty soon.
I don't think that's like one.
After Kristaps Porzingis.
That may be possible, although he is not going to LA. He is going to Dallas. Is leaving home of Momofuku, New York, for Dallas. Should we talk about Seattle food a little bit here? Should we talk about Lil Woody's Burger Month?
Yes.
Oh my God.
The best month of the year? You got spring coming. You got
maybe like July, but No, it's the best month of the year.
You know what I mean? You don't have burger month in July. Like, people are going to eat burgers no matter what. Okay. So, to recap burger month. By the way, can we toast to Luwini's burger month?
Oh, sure. Cheers.
All right. Can we toast to the number of items you've gotten from Lil Woody's Burger Month in the past by going all 4 weeks?
If you crunch the numbers, it's two.
It's a lot of math on this podcast.
So Lil Woody's Burger Month, what they do, if I can summarize, is they invite four of kind of the best and the hottest chefs from throughout Seattle. You know, your Pelton casts of the world. And they... they invite them to custom make a burger at Lil Woody's. And if you, the listener, go, or the eater in this case, go to Lil Woody's and get each of the burgers at the end of the month. And I didn't see this early on in the process for the advertising for this burger month. And
you
I
thought they might have been taking it away.
I was like, why am I even eating these burgers if I don't get something at the end? If you go and have every single one of the burgers, you get a special piece of merch from Lil Woody's. So last year, we all got Lil Woody's aprons.
Yeah, I was going to say, the other way you do this is to have them cater your live podcast, and they bring the aprons.
They didn't bring aprons.
How many times are you going to brag on this podcast? Wait,
they catered our live podcast, but I didn't see an apron.
No, I'm pretty sure that's when I got my apron.
You got an apron?
No, didn't you borrow our apron?
No.
They're giving out aprons to you?
The likes of you.
You have to work for it. I'm kind of upset about this.
They gave you an apron?
I'm pretty sure,
and you didn't earn it.
No.
You did not get the burgers?
I did not go last year. I don't think I went for
it. And they gave you an apron?
Yes.
Fraud.
Anyway, Lil Woody's Burger Month is a sham! So you go, last year it was aprons, right? Which me and Ben Rodriguez both got. By eating the burgers the old-fashioned way, you somehow just show up and get given an apron. In the past, the previous year, I went and got a Lil Woody's burger hat, which to me is probably the foremost signal of the Pelton cast is the burger hat.
Yes.
It's not your own hat.
No, of course not.
The Pelton cast looks a little bit too much to it.
No.
You can't wear it into most public places where people can't see it close range.
I told you this.
It's, you know what? In like 3 years, it's going to look great.
Hopefully. Are you sure?
Three to seven years, it's going to look really good. Oh, my God. Anyway, so you get an item of merch. This year, they call it a burger bag, which is like a lunchbox. It's smaller, I think, than a tote.
Okay.
A Lil Woody's branded. It looks really good. To me, getting another tote bag would not be of interest, but getting this Lil Woody's burger bag is something that I want badly.
Are you going to be able to go to all four burgers? Because you're not right down the street from the Lil Woody's anymore.
You know what? It's going to require a little bit more work than it did in the past, but of course I am.
Also, you're going to be able to go to all the ramen places that we need to go to.
You know what? I'm more likely to go to Lil Woody's.
Oh, no. This is a problem. We'll get to it in a second. All right, the four burgers this month. First up, this week, it started on Tuesday and through the next Monday, Stuart Lane of Spinasse.
It's like a very famous pasta place. Some people would compare it favorably to Il Corvo. I'm shocked that you don't live there.
Live there? I don't know what that means. It's too expensive for me, but.
All right, his sandwich. For the next week here, the Italian Job.
There we go.
Which includes Artusi meatballs, provolone.
Disqualified for the Mark Wahlberg connection.
I don't know if I...
Wasn't he in the Italian Job?
Was he? I don't know.
This was a film? Are you unaware?
No, I thought... Well, you didn't mention it until after I said the meatballs. Yeah,
I thought it had something to do with
Wahlburgers. Arugula, tomato sauce, garlic aioli, and that's all on a Grand Central Bakery ciabatta bun.
That just sounds really great.
It does.
And you know who likes a ciabatta roll?
Is it Bob?
Oh my God. This will make no sense to anyone. So
it's our uncle, the famous cousin.
Somehow I got my computer in airplane mode over here when I'm looking at Mark. How did they put Mark Wahlberg into the Italian Job?
My father claims the best burger in Seattle is the Red's Tavern Double on the ciabatta roll. So
Oh, local burger chain, Red Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which never got reviewed in their search for Seattle's
real best shame. Burger. Bob is very upset.
Week two.
I love the idea. Red Robin.
We're already off the rails here. Week two, Chef Mutsuko Soma from... Let's see here. Not sure exactly what location.
I don't see artisan, any Italians Soban, in this Italian
he's a
movie.
Sake sommelier.
Edward Norton, Donald Sutherland, yes. Mark Wahlberg, and Jason Statham. Are you kidding me? Oh, was Sylvester Stallone busy that day?
Wait, what are we talking about now?
There were the Italian job.
I thought we were talking about this nice lady in her
Mark
burger.
Wahlberg, Charlize Theron, Edward Norton, Jason Statham, sure Seth
just,
Green.
Are you sure that just
Mos Def and Donald Sutherland?
A job done in yeah, Italy? I don't know if it's necessary.
But you couldn't include a single Italian?
Have you seen the movie?
What?
It's like they
was
made
Christopher Maltasanti not available?
It's like they made Matt Damon a samurai.
God.
Okay,
anyway.
The Kamenegi burger, which includes a seared duck / chicken patty, duck egg, arugula very popular in the burger month.
Was the arugula in the Italian burger also?
Yes.
There we go.
Yuzu kewpie mayo on a charcoal bun.
That's the black bun, right?
Yes.
What is a charcoal bun?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter, but it sounds delicious.
All right. Next up, the third week, February 19th through 25th, Mitch Myers, the chef de cuisine at Lark, and his is the deli burr. Ingredients, quarter pound, the usual beef patty, quarter pound patty that they have on the Lil Woody's burgers, the Lil Woody, pastrami, sliced red onions, iceberg lettuce, spicy kosher pickle, Russian dressing, cream cheese mornay on an everything spiced bun.
Oh, so it's like a bagel.
A little bit,
everything
yeah.
spiced bun.
Yeah.
Man, I'm here for that Russian dressing.
That is very interesting. All right. And then the last week, February 26th through March 4th, Melissa Miranda, who is at Bar del Corso and also does pop-up dinners under the name Musang.
Was it Bar del Corso? They primarily do pop-ups?
Is that... I think that's a restaurant
that's
in Beacon
restaurant.
Hill.
Yeah, it's good.
Like in Georgetown?
Mm. Beacon Hill. Mm-hmm. Which is not the same as Georgetown, technically.
I think that she started as doing pop-ups. This was years ago.
That could be.
And they didn't. Now they've become a full-time restaurant. But they started as doing pop-ups or doing private dinners. Is it confirming what I'm saying?
No. It says that she currently does... No, she does these pop-up dinners, melding her traditional Filipino cuisine with the Italian techniques that she utilizes in Bar del Corso and learned in Italy.
With her good friend Seth Green.
What if Seth Green is like super Italian?
You sure looked at it. All right. That's the Serap sandwich. Roasted Seth pulled Green. Pork adobo. Chicharrones. Radishes. Fried garlic. Petite salsa verde on a Hawaiian bun. So.
I'm ready for all these. I'll be there. I'm
obviously
going
you
to
will.
Eat
that is a nice looking tote.
Are you
going to
do it this year? Tote.
Are you
I need that
suck
tote.
It up and eat all these burgers instead of trying to get it through some sort of famous ampersand through.
He knows he doesn't need to. He's just gonna.
Yeah, I don't think I can promise
you're
that.
You're celeb? It's going to be a long St. Patrick's Day for me and Seth Green.
What?
You really not going to eat all these burgers?
Probably not. I'm going to be gone a lot of.
Where are you going?
All-Star Game? Sloan Conference?
How long did the All-Star Game last for a week? Did the Sloan Conference last for a week? Look, you're either competing or you're not.
I also have to eat the ramen for the ramen bracket. Remember the ramen bracket, a thing that we are not doing this week, sadly. Because of the inclement conditions, you were unable to go to either of the two locations, and I was unable to go to Tokyo Ya Ramen in Federal Way. So we're going to have to delay that a week. And instead, because of the fact that we couldn't do a bracket this week, we decided to focus on our introduction to ramen, our formative ramen experiences. Of course, we are talking about instant ramen, and most specifically,
you know what? It's not
top ramen.
Like a good ramen. It's not a solid ramen. It's the top ramen.
Is it though?
How long have you been waiting to make that joke?
Probably about 20 years.
You have no idea how old I am.
You don't think you could have come up with that at age 11?
I'm significantly older. Wait, 12? Than you think.
13? How old are you? That's some potent guess.
So the reason we had to have the famous Cousin Katie here was to talk about ramen. Top of its kind.
I mean, this will not be the only chance she gets to talk about ramen, I don't think, but this is an opportunity to talk about our childhood memories of eating ramen. Oh, right. Honestly, when I think back on my childhood, like one of the defining things is sitting at home with our dad on a Saturday, watching Husky football and eating Top Ramen.
Really? You think it's a Saturday? To me, the best Top Ramen days, right, is you have
you have a power ranking of Top Ramen days?
Well, you have like 90 days of summer, approximately. And every single one of those is a great Top Ramen day.
But it's very warm during the summer.
A great Top Ramen day is because it's a macaroni and cheese day.
That's a fair point.
There were two foods that we ate over the summers. It was Top Ramen, macaroni and cheese for lunch. We ate nothing else for summers in Boulevard Park. Are you telling me I'm wrong? And then after that, we ate pull apart 2-stick popsicles from Costco.
No, sometimes there were firecrackers.
Occasionally, when we got older, I think there were firecrackers.
Well, that's the memory that I have in my head, is eating it on a Saturday, watching Husky football. It would be appropriately chilly at that point. You'd want that.
Yeah, mine is winter, definitely.
Yeah, you'd want the soup to warm up.
It's a summer food.
This is a curious take.
No.
It's not about the food itself.
It's just when you ate it.
It's about when we ate it.
Okay.
Family Ties is on, and we're eating Top Ramen.
Family Ties?
Wow. How?
That's where you went?
How old are you?
Not even the Wonder Years?
Not the Wonder Years. Do you not remember what it was like? Okay. What was the other show?
First off, are you accusing me of not remembering things?
You might remember every single Mariners game from the 90s, but you clearly don't remember when we ate ramen.
I don't remember.
What was the other show? Leonardo DiCaprio?
Oh, Growing Pains. Yes, there was definitely a lot of Growing Pains.
We're watching Growing Pains, and we're eating Top Ramen every single summer. Am I wrong about this? And then eventually we got to high school and we ate Meatball Hot Pockets because that's all they had at Costco.
Okay. I'll buy that.
I used to eat it with my grandmother. She would make it.
And Top Ramen?
Top Ramen, yes. On a hot pot where she worked, and she would make it. But I would go with her, and she would make it. It was a great memory. But
okay, so two things that one would always do making Top Ramen. Number one is, I think we've alluded to at one point during this discussion and horrified people, is to break apart the ramen in the package so that it's small noodles, because of the fact that we were not eating these with chopsticks. Obviously, we were just eating them with a spoon. And number two, every single time, I think tonight might have been the first, when I made this for the purpose of this podcast, may have been the first time I ever made Top Ramen and didn't do this, is putting ice cubes in there to cool it down.
Wait. You do that now?
Oh, yeah. 100% have done that as an adult.
You should bring your own ice cubes to the ramen places we're going to. You should show them with a bowl of ice cubes.
Oh, that would be amazing. It's not a joke. No, this is
cool. It is hot as hell, I have to say.
I mean, I have no patience. I'm not waiting for it to be cool down. I need to eat it as soon as it is.
Wow.
Those 3 minutes are up.
I hate waiting.
Shocking news right now.
I'm too impatient for instant ramen.
Wait, do we get to talk about that?
We're going to talk about that in a second.
Okay.
So you mocked us for the breaking up ramen. Is this not a thing you were doing?
Yes, when I was a child, until I was maybe 12, we would break the ramen.
Okay.
And I think that was what my grandmother did, because she didn't think we could like eat it properly. I don't know. But then once...
I mean, how are you going to eat it properly with a spoon?
Like how you eat pasta, use a fork for your noodles and a spoon for your broth if you don't have chopsticks.
Dubious.
For the record... We do not have chopsticks. Jan is not. There are no chopsticks.
As children, no. I mean, I fortunately had like an extra pair from some visit to go get ramen or something that were hanging around that I was able to use.
Janice Pelton is not using chopsticks.
You guys don't have chopsticks as an adult in your house?
No.
You know what? I'm okay with the idea of chopsticks as an adult. I heard a story about a friend of mine was saying that he was dating this person and they used chopsticks for just eating spaghetti or whatever. And he felt like that was pretty excessive. And I agreed with him.
I mean, I agree.
Did this person grow up using chopsticks, or was it an adult affectation.
Well, he was dating the person, so I don't know what their family did.
Okay.
He just appeared in their life as they were older, eating. But I'm just like.
But if it's something you grew up doing, it's.
If you're eating ramen.
That's true. That's true.
But the thing is, you can eat ramen with a fork.
I've never eaten ramen with a fork.
Just the noodles. It's just like when you go to a ramen place around, and you get the chopsticks for the noodles and you get the spoon.
Yeah, I understand. I understand the concept.
Separate, you know, devices for separate functions.
I'm out on it.
Okay. Well, sure, you're out on it, but I'm just saying it's not that big of a deal.
But when you guys were in like fifth grade, obviously you learned to cook the noodles without any water. You'd boil them and then you'd drain all the water out and then you'd just put the spice packet in there. And then you just eat noodles.
That's the way I ate them now.
Yeah.
I don't think I did that necessarily.
No, we wouldn't, because I would make our ramens.
Would I?
You were like the primary ramen maker, I feel like.
Okay. That sounds, I mean, I definitely.
And you would leave the water in there. And to me, the number one way to eat it, like the way that I eat top ramen now, and the way that I've enjoyed eating it now, is I drain every single bit of water from it. Mm-hmm. I want all the flavor and I want no liquid in it. And there's so much flavor. But this time I had it this week for this exercise that we're doing.
Oh, by the way, that's the other time I think about eating ramen is when one is snowed in. It's like a perfect snowed in food, which made it appropriate for this week.
So I ate it yesterday as we were snowed in and I made it as God intended.
I did that too today. Tonight.
And by God,
you added some things, right?
Yeah, but
I added nothing.
We'll get to that in a second.
I just made it with water and the ramen packet and the noodles.
You mean instant noodle founder or creator Momofuku Ando,
aka God,
namesake of Momofuku.
It was kind of bad.
Oh,
I'm like okay, legit so you, eating it that way. The way that you're eating, when you dry out all the water. The flavors get a lot more, like the noodles get a lot more flavor, right? But I have not eaten ramen without anything else in it for so many years. I'm throwing like Taco Bell hot sauce in there. Like that's the thing is that the ramen noodles in Top Ramen are so malleable. They can get any flavor. You could put egg in there. You could put anything you want. You could chop up. You can put chicken in there if you have it, like dried chicken. You could chop up celery. You could put carrots in there. You can make your own ramen from it.
Sort of.
But if you're eating it as God, a.k.a. Momofuku Ando, intended, it's very bland.
So you had the Nissin Top Ramen, which flavor?
Chicken.
And you had beef?
Beef, yes.
Okay, so I had the chicken top ramen. And then for comparison's sake, for research, I also had the Maruchan Ramen, the other primary competitor. Pork flavor.
Imposters.
So it now turns out that Maruchan ramen has a much wider array of flavors than Top Ramen offers. One thing that we discussed last night in a chat, I was briefly going crazy because I was trying to search for chicken sesame, some sort of sesame Top Ramen that I remembered as being my favorite as a kid. And a couple
you
weeks ago,
this being your favorite,
you liked chicken sesame as a child.
Yeah, I liked the sesame oil, which then I was referencing when we did the ramen bracket, and it was like this one with sesame oil in it, or that was black oil, I think actually. Like it reminded me more of the top ramen I liked as a kid, and there's like only 5 references to chicken sesame top ramen on the entire internet, but it did exist. It was not a Bernstein Bears paradox. It was not a Mandela effect.
I'm skeptical, but okay.
It's like that movie, Sinbad.
Yeah. Shazam? Because Kazam is the real one, right?
I don't know which one is real and which one is
Shazam
fake.
Shazam is the Shaq movie. Kazam is the Sinbad movie.
That can't be.
I don't believe that.
I think it's got to be the opposite. Mm-hmm. But you're going to look it up, so I'll have to stall with it while I'm doing this. Okay, so is...
Kazam is the Shaq movie. Shazam is the Sinbad movie.
That's what I said. Thanks for confirming it. All right, so... I went with the same 10-point scale that I have been using to grade the ramens we've been doing in the ramen bracket.
Always competing.
The top ramen scored a 1 out of 10 on the broth.
Ouch.
The broth is kind of bad. It's really bland.
So here's the thing.
It's shockingly bad.
Here's the thing about the Nissin top ramen. They redid the flavor packets at some point make them healthier. I'm not sure what year.
Healthier? Momofuku Ando is rolling in his grave.
There's a lot less sodium in the Nissin Top Ramen than there is in the Maruchan Top Ramen.
It's supposed to be a sodium packet.
I don't know. I don't know if supposed to is the right word there. So it ends up being a really thin broth.
Yeah, it's very thin.
Also, it's interesting that the chicken is kind of the default flavor. I thought this was an American thing, but in Japan, the original instant noodles were chicken.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was originally known as chicken ramen.
It's funny because we eat so much, well, not that we're eating that much ramen, but in this ramen bracket, we're mostly eating pork flavor, right?
Because that's what traditional ramen is.
And do they even have a pork flavor?
I don't think the top ramen does, no.
Wow.
Again, the Maruchan ramen does. All right.
What is the Maruchan ramen? What is the pork flavor?
Pork.
It's just pork.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want me to compare on along the broth lines?
Absolutely, I do.
Give a 1 out of 10 to the Nissin top ramen. 4 out of 10 to the Maruchan ramen pork, which was far more flavorful.
Wow.
A much stronger broth. Much like, obviously, it's not competitive with an actual good ramen broth, but like. You could squint, and it's not totally different from that in the same way that the Nissin top ramen was.
Most of the broth that we're eating is very rich or spicy in a lot of ways, and top ramen is not that.
No, it is not that at all.
But you think that the Maruchan ramen approaches that conversation?
It tiptoes up to the door of that conversation. Okay. I don't know if it approaches. It doesn't get that close. All right, the noodles. I had to give the Nissin top ramen also a 1 out of 10.
Oh, that's unfair. That's unfair.
No way. I'm sorry, but
I may have undercooked them. I don't know, but
there are five at least.
If they do anything well, it's the noodles. Out of the two things,
you can go straight to hell for that one.
The Maruchan ramen noodles were much stronger, in my opinion. They had like a nice, smooth texture that I liked
much better.
The noodles,
they grow very thick, right? Like they're almost like grow dinosaurs.
Not a good thing.
In the best way possible.
Do you like eating crow dinosaurs? Do you
like,
often
they
eat
get
those?
Really spongy and like grow dinosaurs. That's not what you want in a noodle.
But, is this like eating Tide Pax? Are people eating crow dinosaurs?
If you were to boil them all the way down and get rid of basically any of the liquid and just have the flavor in the noodles, they taste good.
I think you're just liking the flavor packet at that point, not the actual noodles themselves. Honestly, compare these to the noodles that we're getting in the bracket.
I mean, they're not comparable, I suppose, but they're at least a 3.
Yeah,
I gave the Maruchan ramen a 3 on this
wow.
category.
Wow, the Maruchan. You're so really that, a
so my conclusion.
Ramen stand?
My conclusion was that Maruchan destroys Nissin top ramen in its current configuration.
I remember being in college.
No.
And buying whatever was cheaper of the two brands for chicken, only
yeah,
chicken flavor.
Thought they were.
And I don't remember it being like a huge difference, but again, I was only eating it in the.
I think this was before the top ramen.
Sodium reduction.
Makeover.
Wars.
Which, by the way, there's a lot of sodium in the Maruchan ramen. It's 80% of your daily sodium intake. And then I ate the Nissin top ramen on top of that.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was a rough night for me health wise. But you know what? It only cost me 70 cents. So
it's
there you go.
That's the trade off that you make.
And that's actually expensive because I was buying individual packets of them as opposed to buying them.
10 cents back. So
I feel like
you mentioned
the
Nissin top ramen.
Yes.
The blue flavor.
That's the beef.
That's not the beef. Beef is red.
Oh, the soy sauce.
You may call it soy sauce, but I.
Please don't call
no,
it that.
Let's not.
Went into a place called the garage.
No, it's in there.
And the garage, not from any place that I provided. The people who we bought the house from, where top ramen is meant to be.
Yeah.
Sitting in the garage. From the people who own the house that you bought before you. You're supposed to find a box of top ramen from the 1990s, the 1980s, and you're supposed to find, bam! That's the oriental flavor.
No, you're not allowed to say that anymore. They've changed the name to soy sauce.
When did they change the name?
I don't know if that was during the redesign.
That long ago. Because these noodles expired on St. Patrick's Day 2017.
Okay, yeah.
And they have oriental flavor on the package. Because that's the way that they exist from the people you bought your house from.
So how many of these packages have you eaten out of this box?
I have eaten zero.
Did you just discover it now?
I knew that they were there. I have not eaten a single packet from the people that we bought the house from.
Only 2/3 of your daily serving of sodium.
These might
in this
be
one.
Old school sodium packet. You might want to save those. Those might be a relic of time.
Well, they're definitely a relic.
How much do you think those are worth?
They're undoubtedly a relic.
On the ramen
at least
market.
66 cents.
Like, because you're not going to find this, so.
Why do you think they decided not to call them Shoyu? Which is, of
Shoyu?
Course, the type of ramen that would be made from soy sauce.
There's
is
no
the comparable
pork
one
there.
Of this. Well, that's true, but I'm saying in terms of the comparable broth, that's what it would be. No?
Why didn't they call it that?
I don't have the answer for that.
That was a joke. That was obviously middle America is not buying
shoyu
flavor.
Oriental made a lot more sense. Anyway, Howard Schultz really liked the name. He ran it for president.
Oh, boy.
Approval rating 4%.
6%?
Excuse me.
Amongst conservatives. I don't know if that's true.
Do we have anything else to say? On instant ramen.
Wait. Are we going to talk about
the beef?
No, eating the noodles dry.
Oh,
out of the package.
By the way, we should give a shout out. I think he had already thought of this before he did, but Third Pelton brother Mike Bate pointed out it's on Twitter yesterday. It's not the same, but Pelton Cast has me eating so much top ramen. Which is definitely
he
not
the same.
He lives
in Indiana, so it's the best ramen in Indiana.
No,
so.
I think that's got to be untrue.
It's actually number one ramen.
That seems untrue.
Oriental flavor is the number one ramen. I'll mail it to him if he wants. The number one flavor in the state of Indiana. Jim Harbaugh's eating a lot of that.
Jim Harbaugh's not in Indiana.
What's his cousin-in-law and nephew?
Pelton Cast Geography.
The Katie to Jim Harbaugh.
Tom Crean? Is that you referencing? He's not in Indiana anymore either. He coaches at Georgia now.
He's the coach of Georgia?
Yeah. Archie Miller is the coach at Indiana now. Fun fact.
Or is this a segment where Kevin educates Tristan on something?
That could be every segment.
That could not be every.
Oh, boy.
This coming for a person who's earned zero Lowoody's items.
Fair. All right. So what was the origin of the eating top ramen raw discussion?
You ate top ramen raw.
But no, this
we
came
got
up
it on the
for
message
something.
Board when you were looking at the sesame.
Oh, yes. There was a UW football message board had a discussion about chicken sesame top ramen and also had a discussion about just shaking out the flavor packet on the raw noodles.
You still shake out the flavor packet?
I think so.
Yes, you want to get that on the noodles so you get flavor.
Yeah,
and then you eat that.
I think again you crunch them up.
Yeah. 2+ years expired.
That's your safest bet.
You can't pay it. You can't pay attention to those dates. Top ramen never goes bad.
Okay. The oriental flavor is always PC.
Oh no! Stop. We do not need this podcast to get canceled.
By whom?
I think you know by whom. So I have done this before in my life, and then I don't know how many times I did it, but at one point in my childhood, it caused me to throw up, and therefore I can never do it. Could never do it again, and never will the rest of my life.
And see, I question when you told us this story whether you had thrown up as part of your normal winter vomiting cycle when we would play sports when we were children. Whenever it was cold out, Kevin would, for some reason, throw up. I don't know if he had an allergy to the cold.
There were symptoms kind of similar to exercise-induced asthma, but yeah. I don't think I actually had that.
I probably shouldn't make fun of that, but it was hilarious when it happened.
it wasn't a street football game in December until I threw up.
The whole point I'm trying to make here is I don't think you can blame the dry noodles.
So this happened 25 years ago, I'm estimating. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was like 1994. I can't speak to the exact circumstances 25 years later. I don't know if it was necessarily actually the dry top ramen's fault, the uncooked top ramen's fault, but I'm definitely unable to eat it because of the association.
Oh, you won't do it again?
No, never. Will you do it?
What?
Will you do it and have it be a video on the Pelton Cast?
Well, everybody, here's the time.
I will do it, but I will not do the blue flavor.
Okay, that's fair.
The expired version.
I'm not doing expired ramen. Sorry.
I just love the idea that this dried noodles are expired.
Maybe it's the flavor packet. Instant ramen, anything else? Cup noodle thoughts?
Well,
that's a whole different conversation.
You know what? I don't know. Do we consider cup noodles ramen?
I mean, it's the same thing. It's just in a cup.
It just feels so different.
It really does. I mean,
it's because of the fact that it's got the corn and the peas and the carrots in there.
Yeah, vegetables in there.
Excellent. I mean, the worst thing about it, honestly, I mean, look, the thing is, I really enjoy eating cup noodles, but the dried peas, the peas are just like, really, what are you doing? The dried vegetables that exist in the cup noodles are so bad.
Oh, wow.
And the thing about the top ramen in the packet is that it's a conduit for everything else. Is that we can give them bad grades because we're eating it as God intended.
Wait, so you added a soft-boiled egg to yours?
Yes.
How did that go?
Well, I don't really know how to soft boil an egg, so that didn't go well. But
I mean, I considered it, and I was like, yeah, I don't know how to do this.
So
this
I found what done. You're supposed to do is soft boil the egg, then put it in a like a broth or a marinade that's like got soy sauce and something else.
And then
let
you're supposed
it
to
sit
get
there.
In your car, drive to a ramen place, and then buy ramen.
No, you let it sit there for 24 hours. And then you cut it up and put it in your ramen that you cooked the day before. No, but I only had maybe 10 minutes to do this. So I just put it in a little bath of soy sauce and water. And then I put the whole thing in the egg. We're talking about the egg.
Yes.
And I put that into my ramen.
That's what I'm saying is that the cup noodles are what cup noodles are. They're excellent. We love them.
They're microwavable.
They're microwavable or whatever, hot water, whatever you need. Top ramen, you can do a lot of things with. Like, we're reviewing top ramen as it is, as God intended, and it's not good.
No. Especially the Nissan top.
There's a reason that it costs 33 cents.
It's like Totino's Pizza, which I'm a fan of.
Totino's Pizza is excellent.
Hits the spot.
I don't know. If I were to customize the top ramen, I like it. But to me, when I ate it with the water in it, without kind of drying it out, it kind of sucked. It was very bland. You know what I mean? Like, it was very.
Do you think your ramen palate has expanded and improved?
No, I don't. I mean, yes, but I don't.
You
think
don't
that
think
that
that's the explanation?
My feelings, but I think it just kind of sucks.
Okay.
But the thing is about top ramen is that you can do so many different things.
It's right? Very versatile.
So if you add like meatballs to it, if you add chicken to it, if you add diced carrots and diced onions to it, if you add a hot sauce to it, you could add Taco Bell hot sauce to it and it would still taste great. You could add an egg to it. You don't have to, you could crack an egg, drop it into the ramen and it's excellent. There's so many different things you can do to top ramen to make it good, but top ramen on its own without adding anything is bad.
I think maybe you could just dump out a little bit of water.
That too.
But it's still not as flavorful.
I mean, it's never going to be as flavorful as what you get in the restaurant, but it's still, it hits the spot. I will.
I mean, I try
I will
it
go to bat
out.
For the, I would give it a solid 4 across the board.
All right.
Should we talk about sports?
It's not a competitor though.
No. That could win Seattle's best ramen.
What is your most ramen place?
That we've scored so far?
Yeah. Like, how crazy is it to say that top ramen is a 4?
These are not. I mean, like, well, a 4 is whatever, but it's not a competitor with the places that we're going to.
My score for the tonkatsu at Betsu Tenjin was 7 of 10 on broth, 2 of 10 on noodles, wow. 6 of 10 on chashu.
2 of 10?
Yeah, that's probably too low relative to the top
ramen.
If you had head-to-head noodles, top ramen versus Betsu Tenjin, it would not be a 2 of 10.
No, of course not. All the other ones got 6 or higher.
Okay.
I just really did not like their noodles that
jerk.
Time. What are you going to do?
I've heard good things about that place, too.
It just depends if there's an EDM concert going on.
There's been a shocking NBA trade made during the middle of this
wow!
podcast.
Wait,
what happened?
The Clippers are trading Tobias Harris to Philadelphia in a 7-player trade.
We're
out
here breaking news.
We're not breaking news. 6-player trade plus 2 draft picks. So there you go.
To who?
Clippers are getting 2 first-round picks from Philadelphia.
From Philadelphia for Tobias Harris?
Huh.
Like, not to put you on the spot here, but what would you give as a trade grade for Philadelphia and the Clippers?
I need some more time to process this trade before I'm going to give a grade.
But I mean, if how much ramen is involved?
No ramen will be harmed in the making of this trade grade. It's already been harmed. Can we talk about sports, though?
All right, fine. We just weren't talking about sports.
That's true.
Kind of evaded the question.
So speaking of the NBA, the Soto Arena Group sent a letter to the Seattle City Council last week and then also copied the public on it, reiterating their interest in a street vacation in making...
CC the general public?
I mean, look, they called it an open letter, but they actually sent a letter, so it's okay. Just don't call it an open letter if you're not going to send an actual letter. Reiterating their interest in the street vacation and laying out the argument for why it is a better thing for the city council to do than when they voted it down by a 5-4 margin a few years ago, opening the way for the renovation of Key Arena.
So what does this mean?
I mean, basically, so I think the timing here is important because the
Pelicans are about to trade Anthony Davis.
Everything is underway at the former Key Arena. That process is well underway. Nothing is going to change with that. The Soto Arena Group doesn't want to get in the way of that, but they want to have the option for the city of Seattle of having the Soto Arena as an alternative if that's necessary to attract an NBA team, if the Key Arena is not suitable for an NBA team. The new arena at Seattle Center is not suitable for an NBA team. And so it's just kind of reminding everyone, hey, we haven't gone anywhere. We still own all this land. We still would like to build an arena here, even though we know we can't have an NHL team, that we'd only be competing for an NBA team.
But that's fine. I mean, that's all they're really looking to compete for.
Yeah. I mean, that was the original intent. NHL was an addition.
How realistic to you on this day in February 2019 does this seem?
I mean, the members of city council who voted against it are generally still in place. I think it's going to be a tough sell for them, even with the upgrades to the deal, including making it all private as compared to when it originally came up for a vote.
What is being vacant here, out of curiosity?
Occidental, which is an alley that runs, it's vacated, it's dead-ended at one end at Safeco Field and CenturyLink, and then at the other end, now it's being dead-ended at the new Lander overpass that is currently being constructed between First Avenue and Fourth Avenue.
But are there businesses that are being displaced because of this?
There would be businesses that would be displaced if the arena were built, but not because of the vacation per se.
Okay.
And it's not a road that is used by traffic.
Could the city approve this vacation with the caveat that the group has to have the rights to an NBA team?
Yes, I think that's generally part of the agreement they're proposing. So that nothing would happen here until or unless they secure an NBA team.
So, I mean, the pressure is really on the group to go out and find an NBA partner to really kind of push this forward. Because if they had the partner there, all of a sudden the street vacation seems more realistic.
Of course.
And they can vote on it at any time.
Yes.
So,
because I believe it's past the necessary steps before going to council.
Were the Hansen Group to acquire an NBA team or have an NBA team that they had serious conversations with, they could go back to the city council and say, would you approve the street vacation?
Yes.
How much resistance do you think they would see for that?
I don't know. It's tough to say. I mean, obviously, the new Oakview that is redeveloping Seattle Center would see that as a competitor, particularly in terms of the profitable concert market, and would not want to have a second arena in the city of Seattle. Mm-hmm. Who is
the concert partner for them for the Soto Arena?
I don't think they have a specific one now, but you know, you can kind of do the logic that if Live Nation is associated with Oakview Group,
it's basically AG.
That's the other competitor.
Yeah.
So presumably, yes. So, I mean, I think the one thing working in the favor of this group is that Jenny Durkin has expressed more interest in this certainly than Ed Murray did in his administration. And it was kind of, you know, he was not supporting the original street vacation request. So there's a chance, but I would still say it's a long shot at this point. All right. Speaking of,
that's a fighting team. Like that's the thing.
I mean, but there's a bit of a chicken and egg thing here, where are you going to go out and buy a team if there's not the possibility of getting an arena built?
Buy that team.
Probably.
Because the leverage that you get by owning the team is more important than any of this local street vacation stuff, right? Like, they could overcome anything locally if they had the team.
Probably. Speaking of Oakview Group, they were in the news last week asking for a deferral of the sales tax on the construction of the arena, as well as the practice facility to be located at Northgate until 2022 after the arena opens. That would amount to an $80 or $90 million deferral. Similar, though smaller, deferrals of sales tax were granted for the construction of CenturyLink Field and T-Mobile Park. And I think OQ made a pretty solid case through the media last week that this is kind of standard operating procedure for construction projects of this nature. Is part of the media around this, Tim Leiwicki of OQ Group did an interview with King 5's Chris Daniels, told him that an announcement of a minor league AHL affiliate for the new Seattle NHL team is expected in the next 30 to 60 days. Also, an update on the construction process. The seats are now gone from Key Arena. The removal of concrete and digging down to produce the larger the capacity will begin in March after kind of that process is complete. So,
cool.
That continues. The Sounders played their first match of 2019, a scrimmage against Atlanta United in California, where they've been training, and lost 7-1.
And to who?
Atlanta United, defending MLS Cup champions.
Still.
Atlanta started their preseason training earlier in anticipation of the CONCACAF Champions League. They have a match coming up here in, I think, a little over two weeks.
It's okay. The Huskies beat Nevada in a scrimmage.
Also true.
Let's just say that scrimmages don't matter.
The Sounders rotated in 32 players for the four 30-minute scrimmages. So obviously going deep, deep into the not only their roster, but the second team roster. Notably, Chad Marshall played 30 minutes and Jordan Morris 27 in both of their return from injuries and surgeries that they had in 2018.
So should we expect Jordan Morris to be healthy?
I think so.
Day one starting for the Sounders?
We'll see about starting, but I think day one, you know, probably playing without really real restrictions.
27 minutes is a lot of minutes.
Yeah, and we're still, you know, several weeks away from the opener, about a month away.
And they only lost 7-1 with him on the field.
I don't know how many of those goals were scored with Jordan Morris on the field. He played with the second team, I think, generally. Marshall played with the starters.
Not the third or fourth or fifth team?
No. In other Sounders roster news, left back Waylon Francis was traded back to Columbus from whence he came a year ago for $50,000 in general allocation money. Seems to be an indication that Nuhu, after we talked about transfer rumors last week, isn't going anywhere anytime soon, which means the Sounders are very well stocked at left back with both Nuhu and Brad Smith, who's on loan. Nuhu arrived in camp this week.
How long is that Brad Smith loan, by the way?
Through July, but okay. There's a potential that it could be made permanent. Nuhu arrived in camp this week after dealing with visa issues and was expected to practice Tuesday. Other Sounders roster news, Jordy DeLem and Kelvin Leerdam both received their green cards last week, meaning they no longer occupy international spots on the roster.
They're luckier than 21 Savage.
And then lastly on the soccer front, the former S2, the team that some of these players were playing in that exhibition, has been rebranded as the Tacoma Defiance as they enter their second year of playing at Cheney Stadium in Tacoma. And they will now be joined in Tacoma by Reign FC, which is dropping Seattle from its name as part of the move from Memorial Stadium. They'll play in Cheney Stadium for now and then in the new soccer-specific stadium that is planned in Tacoma for 2021. The Reign also welcomed Sounders managing owner Adrian Hanauer and the Tacoma Rainiers, who have been a partner to the Defiance, as minority investors. So kind of a more synergy among the Seattle area soccer teams and then also the Tacoma kind of minor league teams.
You know, it's a minor league city.
I'm not going to say that.
But I do like this Defiance thing, right?
It's a good name, yeah.
No, it's a great name.
I'm very anti-singular names, but that's
the real issue cool. Is that, like, I would have gone to a game when they were playing at Starfire. I'm not going to Tacoma.
No, but the good people of Tacoma. Base yeah.
of their own.
Exactly.
Like, people who actually care. Like, I'm a Sounders fan who might happen to go to a game at Starfire for the S2 team or the Defiance team or whatever. But, like, you might actually find a fan base of real people who care about that team in Tacoma. So I think it makes a little bit
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, I mean, I would complain about the fact that I think I went to 2 rain games and 1 S2 game when they were at Starfire.
Like, I went to Starfire for a Sounders game that they played there.
Some fans of the rain, at least, that were in Seattle. They're not.
Oh, there definitely were.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who were bummed out about it, for sure.
I think more so for the rain than for S2.
Yeah.
I mean, an S2 fan is a Sounders fan.
Yes.
At this point, if you're going to a game in Tukwila, you could just go to the Sounders.
But the rain's hand was a little bit forced. The NWSL hadn't certified Memorial Stadium as a venue for 2019 because it's some of the limitations around there. And that was part of what kind of forced their hand on this move.
So they weren't necessarily that interested in it, but they had to do it.
I think long term, once they get into the new stadium in 2021, it'll be a great home for them because that'll be the right size for NWSL.
Where is that stadium going to be?
It's a park in Tacoma. I don't know where that
but
park
they're going
is located.
They're going to kind of own that park.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it probably makes sense.
I think it's good.
To me, owning a specific city is more important than just being around in a bigger city.
Yeah. A quick Storm update is their offseason continues. Free agency opened last week, and the Storm re-signed centers Crystal Langhorne and Mercedes Russell to multi-year deals. That means that now 11 of the 12 players from the 2018 championship roster are under contract, with veteran Noel Quinn the only exception.
Feel free to delete the 21 Savage thing.
That's fine. Langhorne was a bit of a surprise.
Deemed fine.
Her role changed substantially last season with Natasha Howard taking over as the Storm starting center, but still happy to be in Seattle, re-signed as an unrestricted free agent.
Just don't say anything about Howard Schultz.
After having been cored previously.
You know, person of means. That's what we call him.
I feel like, anyway, sorry. Keep going.
You know, Football Front, Wednesday is signing day. Much of the drama was taken out of signing day by the early signing period in December, where the Huskies added the bulk of their recruiting class. The Huskies will, we know for sure, sign safety Asa Turner, who had originally planned to sign with UW in December before reconsidering his decision between the Huskies and Notre Dame. He then recommitted to UW last week. Huskies still on a handful of players expected to announce their decisions on Wednesday. So
there
we'll
are a couple players that seem like the Huskies might be in the mix for.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, in the mix four.
There's like, they're in the final two now. They're in the final two often with teams like Alabama. So you don't know how confident you are of winning those, but I think the odds are that someone else will probably be added.
Look, the Huskies were close in their last game. So I think that we could see a class that is a top 15 class at this point.
No, they're not going to jump up that much.
Where are they at right now, though, is what I'm saying.
I thought they were like 25 now. They've dropped substantially. No, I guess I'm wrong. They're still at 15th in the
recruiting rankings. Wrong again. We could see a class that was a top 15 class pick up a couple of extra recruits in this class and bump them up to 13, 12, 11. I mean, we're talking about...
I think it's more like... But the other teams can pick up players too, you know? I think they're actually more likely because UW's strategy is not that dependent on players deciding.
I don't mean to pivot here.
They're not going to get the five-star.
For what I'm saying is that... Recruiting classes don't matter to Chris Peterson.
No, I mean,
but
the Athletic
you have
did a nice
one of
piece.
The best coaches in the country picking up a top 15 recruiting class.
The Athletic did a nice piece last week re-ranking the 2015 recruiting class and putting the Huskies eighth by that measure.
There we go.
Yeah. Which it still actually kind of seems kind of low when they had Jake Browning, Miles Gaskin.
Like, eighth is not
but
that good for
but
being
it's,
a Rose
But it's
Bowl.
Generally like the teams that are ahead of them are the teams that beat them in all of these games. I don't know if Ohio State actually was ahead of them, but both Penn State and Alabama, of course, were. UW women's basketball dropped both games in L.A. last week in an 82-57 loss Friday at USC and a 76-60 loss Sunday at UCLA, dropping to 1-9 in Pac-12 play. Thursday's matchup against Arizona at home, probably their last real chance to get a home win this season with the Bay schools coming in to wrap up Pac-12 play for them. They also will host Arizona State on Saturday.
But... Husky women's basketball is bizarro Husky men's basketball.
Not quite, because they do have a conference win, but the UW men continue undefeated in conference play, now 9-0 a perfect 9-0 at the midway point of the conference, three games up on anyone else in the Pac-12 after beating USC 75-62 and UCLA 69-55 last weekend to move all the way up to number 26 in the AP poll.
How many votes do you have in this poll?
I do not have any votes.
How many times have you unranked them to keep this team at 9-0 in the Pac-12 unranked?
I mean, I was looking, Cincinnati, who's number 25, is a pretty good comparison for the Huskies. They're 8-1 in the American Conference.
There was a team that scored like 20 points in a game who was ranked ahead.
Well, they're not ranked anymore.
Still.
North Carolina State is not ranked.
How many people do you need to rank ahead of them before this team could get into the top 25?
I mean, the answer is probably 25. By definition, they're actually lower in the coaches' poll, where they are third among also receiving votes, so 28th overall.
Do we want them to be ranked though?
It is more convenient to find their scores.
Is it?
Yeah.
These rankings matter.
I'm talking about like.
No, not really.
We don't want them to be ranked till the end of the very, very tail end.
I would actually rather them be ranked very high.
But then what if it gets, you know, they put on their cool jackets?
Which players in the Huskies have cool jackets?
I don't know.
Jalen. Jalen Noel definitely has a cool jacket. But Matisse Thybulle does not own a cool jacket.
That's true.
You're nervous about the team getting too cocky?
Just like, yeah. Like.
I mean, I think the undefeated conference record could do that even without the ranking. But maybe the non-ranking keeps them humble.
No, they feel like they still have a lot something more to play prove.
For. Oh, yeah, well, I guess that's fair.
The haters are out there making sure that they are not ranked despite being 9-0 in the Pac-12.
Being number 34 in KenPom.
Wait, you're still a hater?
We're approaching.
He's a mild hater.
We're
mild
approaching hater. The highest rating for the Huskies since their last NCAA tournament in 2011, appearance in 2011. Their highest in
which
the last...
Game, which year was that?
8 years.
They lost to Purdue?
2011? No, that was not. That was the loss to North Carolina, or to Duke, to
oh, we North Carolina in the second round. North Carolina? Oh my God. Okay, so we're approaching that realm?
Yes. No, we're approaching. No, I mean they were like 11 at that point. We're approaching the record highest ranking since then in the subsequent 8 years, which of course they got up as high as number 31 during the short-lived Robert Upshaw era. Huskies now projected by KenPom to go 16-2 in Pac-12 play, four games ahead of second place projected Arizona State at 12-6.
30th in the country,
and they are now up to 8th in the latest bracketology on ESPN.
Oh, they're up to an 8 seed.
Yeah.
Wait, were they there before?
I think they were 9. They moved up once.
They're functionally at the exact same place.
The big question mark this week, of course, is the health of Noah Dickerson, who badly rolled his ankle during Saturday's win over UCLA and missed most of the second. Was it all of the second half of that game? Was that in the first half? That was after halftime. He left
he
a couple times.
He was injured once in the first half.
Yes.
And then again in the second half.
Which seems scary. Went out holding his shoulder. It seemed like it had been... come out of the socket, but he was able to return from that. Coach Mike Hopkins told Mitch Levy on Mitch Unfiltered in an episode that I appeared on.
Wow.
Check that out.
God.
It's obviously sore and tender, but he's a tough kid who's gone through a lot this year. I think he'll be ready. He's getting treatment 3 times a day. I'm sure he'll be ready to go.
What does that mean?
The update on Tuesday was, what do you mean?
I'm sure he'll be ready to go for Thursday.
That's what he was implying. The update was not as positive on Tuesday after Dickerson did not practice Monday.
He was just fired about being on a podcast with you.
I don't think he was aware of that.
He gets fired up very easily, so that it could be true.
Yeah, that's fair.
He did some push-ups.
Hopkins
you did push-ups too.
Called him day-to-day on Tuesday, and I did not do push-ups. He will definitely travel with the team, but his status still uncertain for Thursday's game.
I think he misses both these games this week.
I could see him... more, maybe missing one and coming back for the other.
I think that's possible.
I mean, so the encouraging thing is that the Huskies played so well after Dickerson left. Sam Timmons was phenomenal in the middle.
Bill Walton is in the building.
So we need Walton to announce all Sam Timmons.
I think that's what we need.
Or do we need Sam Timmons' crazy ripped dad to be at all the games? He looked so good out there.
Sam Timmons actually...
Wait, we're talking about his dad or we're talking about...
Sam Timmons has looked pretty good for about 2-3 weeks straight.
It's interesting because, like, at the end of non-conference play, I was like, this guy is not part of the the plans at all. Like, Kamir Wright had taken his starting job. The Huskies were playing a lot of small ball with Noah Dickerson in the middle. Timmons was barely playing. But all of a sudden, he has been effective and a big part of the team's success in conference play. And it's very well timed if Dickerson does manage to miss this week. Brian Penn Johnson didn't dress for the game on Saturday. You'd probably want him to be available for depth reasons. I mean, one of the big concerns here is what if Timmons gets in foul trouble?
Mm-hmm. So who do they play first?
They play Arizona on Thursday. And so,
who's the better team at this point?
Arizona State is the better team. Yeah, I mean, they're the second best team in the Pac-12.
These words can't be right.
They can be right. They can and they are.
What is going on with Arizona? Why are they so bad?
Yeah, why does Arizona suck so bad?
We shouldn't talk about that. Now they're going to beat us. I mean,
that's a terrible
But I mean, we're saying this in a deferential way. In almost like...
Like, what has caused Arizona to lose the game?
Well, they don't have DeAndre Ayton. And the players that they have, they also lost Alonzo Trier to the NBA. The players that they have, while still highly recruited, have not necessarily been as effective as you'd expect. And that, I think, starts kind of with freshman point guard Brandon Williams, who will not play this weekend due to a knee injury that kept him out against the Arizona State game out of the Arizona State game last week, which Arizona lost 95-88 in overtime in Tempe, dropping to 5-4 in Pac-12 play. Williams had been playing better in conference, making 40% of his threes after just 27% shooting in non-conference play. But, you know, he was a very touted player, maybe obviously not on the Ayton level, but, you know, expected to be one of the Pac-12's best freshmen and hadn't really gotten to that point, I don't think. Arizona has now, after that game, lost 3 in a row all on the road and 4 of the last 5 after starting Pac-12 play 4-0. They are making a conference low 42% of their two-point attempts in Pac-12 play, which is not a good thing going up against the Husky zone. They are also 9th in conference defensive rating, where they have been hurt by giving up 39% to opponents on threes. Transfer Chase Jeter has really dropped off in the middle. He came from Duke. He played well in non-conference, but is shooting barely over 50% on twos in conference play. He also missed nearly 3 full games with a back injury before returning to play 31 minutes off the bench against Arizona State. The one big worry in this game, I think, is that Jeter and his front court mate Ryan Luther could give the Huskies trouble on the offensive glass. The good news, though, is that they're particularly foul prone in Arizona's team.
So these are all highly ranked players?
Generally, yeah.
And then it's just not gelling together?
Yeah, I mean, I think also you've also got the specter of the NCAA sanctions kind of potentially looming over Arizona.
But does that make players play worse? Like, I don't believe that. It's just that...
They've lost some player. They had a player transfer midseason. I mean...
They have a very skilled group of people who are not kind of gelling together as a team. Like,
I don't know if I would say skilled. I think... I don't know that that's necessarily...
A recruited group of players?
Yeah, I mean, look. Sometimes players aren't as good as their recruiting rankings.
But, like, why is it coalesced to be Arizona this year?
I don't know. I mean, what answer are you looking for from me?
I'm saying that Sean Miller forgot
that Sean Miller is taking a sabbatical? That he's like... I mean, they have talented players, and those players don't play good. Like, guess what? That's like the last 10 years of Husky basketball.
It's like the what are you looking for? Pac-12. I'm just that saying is... they don't get it. Like the Pac-12.
I don't get it either. Why
would players who are highly recruited? The NBA is littered with Pac-12 players. We're like, there's no shortage of Pac-12 players in the NBA. But the Pac-12 has not been good for
not
10 years. When was the last time we were a 4-bid conference? Yeah, there was really competition for the Pac-12.
They've definitely been a 4-bid conference.
Right now we're talking about two teams. We were talking about one team who's in and another team who's in the first four out.
Again, what do you want me to tell you here?
Why doesn't it work? What is wrong with the Pac-12? What's wrong with Arizona? I mean, is it recruiting violations? Is it Sean Miller? What is it?
I don't know.
Why are the Huskies going to lose this game on Thursday?
Because it's on the road, and it's hard to win on the road. There were 4 Pac-12 teams in the NCAA tournament in 2017, so you have to go back a whopping 2 years.
They're probably all 9 seeds or plus.
No, that is not accurate. Just like, Oregon was a 3 seed. Arizona was a 2 seed.
It feels like it's been a very long time since we've had a really competitive Pac-12.
And UCLA was a 3 seed. Wow. There were 3, yeah. So I don't know what you're talking about. All of those teams went 15-3 and better in conference play.
They all won 30-plus games. In the NCAA tournament.
No, Oregon got to the Final Four that year.
Oh, God. Remember? They played Gonzaga?
No, they did not play Gonzaga.
Oh. Anyway.
They could have played Gonzaga.
I just don't get why Arizona's bad.
I don't get it either. I don't know. I guess
There's no reason for things.
Shit just happens sometimes.
Sean Miller sucks. Okay, so what about Arizona State?
So Arizona State started the season 7-0. They were carrying the flag for the Pac-12.
Let's just say
they were carrying the flag for the Pac-12. They actually were ranked before losing to Nevada in LA and then at Vanderbilt to fall out of the top 25. Subsequent to that, they upset Kansas and Lawrence, but followed that up.
Who hasn't upset Kansas and Lawrence?
Well, we did in Kansas City, so it was different. Before getting beat at home by Princeton in their non-conference finale, then they subsequently lost at home to Utah in their Pac-12 opener and were just 2-2 after losing at Stanford, but have since rebounded to win 4 of their last 5 and look more like the team
Arizona's
we sort of expected.
Arizona's an actual good team.
Arizona State.
Arizona State is an actual good team.
I don't know if I'd go so far as to say good. They have some effect.
How would you describe the Huskies?
They're not terrible. Wow. No, they're good. They're good. I think they are good.
What would have to happen for you to
They'd
like
have to
the Huskies?
Beat a non-conference, power conference
we
team that's
not
from the Pac-12.
We're lost by a point.
Things would look a lot better had they not lost by a point. This is how the world works.
Don't matter.
They do matter.
The Minnesota selection committee matters to pollsters. They don't matter statistically. The Minnesota loss, you're upset by?
I'm not upset by, but
God, this team should be. If they had beaten Minnesota and Gonzaga,
because the Pac-12 is not a major conference this year. The Pac-12 is a glorified.
Wait. Let's take it back.
Mid-major.
This year means the last 10 years.
No, this year in particular, they were.
The Pac-12 was a quote-unquote major conference.
I just told you about a year, 2 years ago, where they had three teams that were top three seeds.
Regular.
Yes.
That's probably fair.
The Pac. Why is the Pac-12 so bad every
year? I don't know.
So angry.
There's no answer for this. It's like we're not.
Can we just talk about this game?
This is the year that the Pac-12 doesn't matter.
I mean, it's not the only year. I mean, maybe the Huskies are taking advantage of the fact that other Pac-12 teams are bad. Did you consider that possibility?
How many Pac-12 games do you play in total?
18.
We are going 16-2.
We'll see. Arizona State has the best offensive rebound rate in Pac-12 play, so that's going to be a big concern for the UW zone. Center Romello White is the biggest force in the offensive glass and making better than 60% of twos in conference play. Both White and power forward Zillin Cheatham offer strong rim protection. Opponents are making just 44% of their twos in conference play. Luguentz Dort is a first-round prospect at guard for Arizona State, but hasn't played so well in conference play. He's made just 9 of 46 threes thus far. Good at getting to the free throw lines. The Huskies will want to keep him out of the paint. His backcourt mate, Remy Martin, has caught fire from three. He shot just 16% in non-conference play, but is up to 48% so far in Pac-12.
So the way that we approach this weekend, if you're a Husky fan, is... We can lose both these games.
No.
Tell us more.
I mean, the schedule gets very favorable after this weekend. The Huskies will play 4 of their final 7 games at home, and the 3 road games are against the 3 worst teams in the conference, Cal, Stanford, and Wazoo.
Huskies are going undefeated. Provided...
I wouldn't go that far.
Provided there are no injuries or whatever...
I think 6-1 is a realistic expectation after this weekend.
There's a very good chance that they win a lot of games after this weekend.
I mean, my thought early on in conference play is like, look, if the Huskies can just get through the Arizona trip atop the conference, they're going to win the conference. And now that's guaranteed.
But that doesn't mean anything unless they win the conference in a very
decisive
fashion.
Nothing. We know for a fact that winning the regular season in the Pac-12 means nothing.
I mean, it's a one-bid league, so, you know.
It's a 1.5 bid league.
I mean, you win the Southern Conference regular season. It's not like you're like, oh, now we're getting the NCAA tournament.
Like, okay, say...
You win the MEAC regular season, you're not like, hey, why aren't we ranked in the top 25?
Pick in the draft, but it's the same as winning the MEAC. God. I mean, they're not actually going to.
The who are you even talking about?
The Pac-12 only has the number one pick in the draft when it's an exceedingly bad player. But they did it last year, and 2 years in a row,
DeAndre
the conference has had the number one pick in the draft.
DeAndre Ayton's not exceedingly bad.
You're comparing them to the MEAC. Like, what are you doing here? 2 years in a row.
I don't actually think they're comparable to the MEAC. Again, I think they're comparable to the American, where Cincinnati can go 8-1 and get to number 25.
I hate you people. Seriously, how many votes do you get for the top 25?
All of them. I vote the entire top 25.
You had to throw enough to the Huskies to get them to 26, but you calculated that they would not crack the top 25.
All right, so any other thoughts on this weekend?
But if they were to lose both these games,
yes,
the Huskies are still in a very good situation.
They're not in a bad situation.
So you think even if they had three losses in Pac-12, they would be like...
They would definitely be on the right side of the bubble. I don't know if they'd be in a position where you can lose to the 8th seed in the first game of the Pac-12 tournament or the 9th seed and still make it, which is a position we don't like to be in. Yes, obviously. I think if you go 16-2 in conference play, you probably get to that
point. Come on! If but you're 16-2 in the Pac-12,
but maybe try not losing to the 8 or 9 seed in the first game of the Pac-12 tournament. That's an idea to consider,
but
too.
Tony Run doesn't hit free throws. But they want to be in a position where they are better than that team. Like, it weighs over us, right?
Yeah.
What year was that?
2012.
The 2012 team, like, is a weight on our shoulders. Because of what happened.
I don't think it really is.
I remember being so excited for the.
I mean, I don't think anyone outside of Seattle remembers that.
And then us not getting in. It doesn't even though people said we weren't going to get in, I still thought we would. I thought the Pac-12 would be respected. We weren't.
Don't ever expect that. Okay. The Pac-12 would not be respected. Look, here's your national perspective right here. I'm pointing at it.
Objective perspective. Let's go with objective perspective.
And they do not like the Pac-12.
I've learned that.
You know who else didn't like the Pac-12? The results. Beating Princeton at home doesn't like the Pac-12.
Look, the Huskies didn't lose to Princeton at home. Like, that's the thing.
But the other teams did. And so then when they play those other teams, they're getting judged by what they did and didn't do in non-conference play. That's how it works.
But the pollsters, Ken Pomeroy,
the pollsters still have
Ken
them higher.
Not overly judging the losses to Minnesota and Gonzaga, but the pollsters are.
But then, so then why do they have them higher than KenPom? How can you make this contradictory argument?
Don't worry about it. I can still make it. I'm saying that based upon these results, 9-0 in Pac-12 play, this is a top 25 team.
Typically, you would expect a team like this to be ranked in the top 25.
I mean, like, it's honestly, like, it's getting ridiculous that they're not. If they win, we keep going every single weekend. Oh, if they win out this weekend, are they going to be ranked? If they win out this weekend, are they going to be ranked?
This weekend, I feel comfortable saying if the Huskies beat both Arizona schools,
yeah, you said that shit the last 2 weekends. So
it will, you know, I will put a wager on it if you want to.
I mean, obviously, like, since they're at 26, they probably can crack 24, 25.
I can afford to spend some money if James Harden doesn't seem to be scoring 70 anytime
soon. He's still scoring 70. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
But.
So I think their chances this weekend are pretty close to 50-50 in both games. Maybe a little better against Arizona, a little worse against Arizona State. But that means there's a 1-4 chance they do go 0-2. And are still in fine position, and a 1-4 chance that they go 2-0 and are completely, like, at that point, they haven't clinched the Pac-12, but they're sitting pretty.
Yeah. Going 2-0?
Yeah.
Pac-12's over.
They're sitting pretty.
I mean, with those games left at undefeated, like, we can't even consider that perspective.
All right.
What are they in bracketology if they go undefeated this weekend?
Maybe a 6. You know, somewhere between a 6 and
a
7.
They have a perfect Pac-12 season.
So, like, what's the ceiling for them?
Yeah. If they have a perfect Pac-12, we're getting way
ahead. Win the Pac-12 tournament?
Win the Pac-12 tournament. They do not lose a game after December or whatever.
3 or 4.
That's not bad.
I would take it.
We would all take
anything getting in.
I just want to get in the tournament. That's all.
That's true.
That's all I care about.
Well, hopefully they can go out and win these games against these Arizona schools, which they should be favored in each.
No.
What does Kent Pomeroy have them in each of these games?
I mean, it's right around 50-50. That's why I said that. I believe it's like... It's 52% at Arizona, 48% at Arizona State. So Arizona State is the one game left on their schedule in which they are not favored by KenPom.
Even if they split these, I think we're in a very good position.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, if they split them, their worst case scenario, two games up with a favorable schedule the rest of the way.
Can we just take a step back here, though? Shout out to David Crisp.
Yes.
How do we...
playing well, like, really, let's talk about, we've talked so much kind of contextually about the team in general.
David Crisp still at 51% on threes in conference play.
On the court, Matisse Thybulle with the steals, David Crisp shooting threes. Like, this team is playing very well.
I want it noted that I was early on this idea that Matisse Thybulle was the greatest guard defender in the Syracuse zone ever. Which Mike Hopkins obviously didn't see the entire Jim Boeheim era, but he agreed with that on Mitch Unfiltered.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a question that people are talking about?
I mean, it's a question that Mitch is talking about as a Syracuse fan.
Oh, he's a... I forgot about that, that he's a Syracuse
and,
guy.
And alum, yeah. They overlapped here.
The way that the Huskies play this zone defense, is it different than Syracuse typically does?
It's a little more...
Do they typically play a 3-2 or a 2-3?
Syracuse?
Yeah.
2-3.
But, I mean, the Huskies are playing, like, Teese way out.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
With two guards on the perimeter, it's a more modern, it's basically, I mean, a 3-2.
It is interesting that there was a... I can't remember exactly what the graph was, but there was a graph. There's a guy named Jordan Sperber who was formerly on the staff at Nevada. And
shouts at Jordan Sperber.
Now does... did analytics for them and now publishes a newsletter about coaching and analytics. And he had some sort of graph about defense, and Syracuse and UW were like in the same quadrant and everyone else was way away from them. It was like, wow, Hop really has like cloned the Syracuse defense and brought it to Seattle.
And playing exceptionally well.
Yeah.
Syracuse is playing very well also.
Defensively, yeah.
But Teese is like high at the top.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, this...
And getting more draft buzz lately.
He's getting drafted.
He seems like... Did he have draft buzz at the beginning of the season?
Like, he had some, but he's getting more of it.
I feel like he's going to be a star.
I don't know if I go star, but he's going to be a valuable player. Like,
solid NBA player. But so David Crisp has sort of... The talk was that he changed the shooting motion going into Pac-12 play, right?
Okay.
He got more lift on his three-point shots.
And now he's shooting more than 50% on threes.
I don't think he's going to keep shooting more than 50% on threes.
See, this is why I don't like coming on this podcast.
It's fine, though. It's fine.
I don't either.
I mean, the Huskies are winning by an average of 20 points per 100 possession in conference play. They can afford to get worse, and they've got room to go down.
I don't like that, though, because then, you know, things can go either way.
I mean, I don't think the Huskies are going
to
keep having...
That's what Hop is trying to have them do, is, like, finish out games. Not let the margin of victory get too small, because you never know what can happen.
I agree with that philosophy. I'm just saying there's some things that are outside of your control, including how often you hit three-pointers.
David Chris has played exceptionally well. Sam Timmons has played exceptionally well. Matisse playing defense has been... It was shocking at some moments in that UCLA game, kind of what he was doing.
He still can't get to the 9 steals he needs to tie Jason Hamilton for the school record, though.
Wow. It's
really,
nine.
Really struggling.
He can't get to it. It's in a game?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot.
He's the career record
so
by far.
So Thybulle,
right?
Had 6 in like the first 15 minutes on Saturday, but finished with 7.
Is someone telling him? Someone is.
Oh, yeah. He made it very clear in the post-game interview that he knew
Jason
about it.
Jason Hamilton was yelling from the sidelines. There might have been somebody in the building telling him not to get there.
Jason has made peace with it.
9 steals, Jason Hamilton.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that this team has been incredibly impressive. And even with Noah Dickerson going out, continuing to play well after that, you know, like Noah, we saw kind of got minimized in the offense and played like so well in that game on, I guess it was Wednesday night, right? Against USC, where he was the focal point of the offense. But then seeing them come back on Saturday and have him getting injured and still being able to dominate offensively in that game.
Yep.
Like, this is a big deal here.
Yeah. All right. On that note.
Hope we went too.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Thank you.